You might have heard that the Metallica boys were gonna play some heavy shit tonight.
Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast, Metal Tales from the Road. I'm Ethan Luck by myself. We haven't done these in quite a while. We're getting back into it. We're going to try to knock out a bunch of your episodes that you have signed up for through Patreon and all that good stuff. And it's bright and early in the morning. It's 8:30 here in Nashville, and it is 6:30 in the morning Pacific time in Seattle, which leads me to our guest for this episode. Jay Middleton is here, and we're going to be talking about Seattle, Washington, 2008. It was December 1st. So we're in the thick of the Death Magnetic tour cycle, and Jay, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. I'm happy to be on my favorite podcast right now.
Do you want a digital autograph over a camera? Here you go.
Yeah, give me one of those, what do they call those, NFTs? Those non-fungible tokens or whatever
exactly.
They're called.
Exactly. I'm gonna upload my signature as an NFT, and only one person can buy it. So I'll give you first dibs. How about that?
There we go.
Perfect. Well, man, I appreciate getting up bright and early. I know it's extra early where you're at in Seattle. I mean, we don't often do episodes this early in general. Every once in a while we have to. I don't know if this takes the cake as the earliest. Maybe when, you know, in the years past when I've been in Europe on tour and Clint's been on the West Coast, he's had to get up super early or something. But this is probably, I'd say this is in the top five earliest episodes, at least, especially for you. So,
it's all good. I wake up early anyways every day, so it's just, it's a way of life.
Right, exactly, yeah. And you're recording this from work as we speak.
Yeah, I am. I am, just because if we did this right now, I would normally be on my way to work right now.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, I think it's awesome. I think at some point, if we're still talking, your coworkers are walking by your office, they're going to be like, he's definitely not working on stuff for our job.
No, that's what I tried to get all that stuff handled before we started this thing. So
your boss walks by and he's like, we don't do anything with Metallica. What is he doing in there?
Funny thing is, I am the boss here. So,
well, there you go. So then
don't worry about that.
you don't have to worry about getting fired for just discussing Metallica at work. Exactly. Well, man, let's get into just a bit of your origin story with Metallica, when you got into the band. What about it excited you to dive deep into their catalog, and, you know, maybe the first record you bought, your favorite record, things like that?
Okay. So the first time I heard Metallica was definitely on the radio, probably Enter Sandman or something like that, but I didn't really dig deep into it. Then I was really young. I was probably like 7 or 8. And realistically, like, I didn't have access during that time. I'm 32 years old. So like when I was 8, it was still like before 2000. So we didn't really have a lot of, like, you know, things on the internet at the time to go deep dive in or whatever. And I didn't have any money to go buy records on my own, really. So I would just listen to the radio. I always had a little Walkman radio that I had just to listen to radio stations like KSW, KZOK, more of the rock stations up here. There used to be a really cool younger or new rock station called The Monkey that used to be around here.
Yeah, but I remember that.
Short-lived. Yeah. And so that's where I kind of like listened to a bunch of different heavier things too. And KSW has this metal show on Saturday nights called Metal Shop.
Nice.
And I remember listening to that late at night. There used to be a DJ on Metallica that, or not Metallica, KSW, it's early. she used to host a thing at 7 o'clock every night called Mandatory Metallica.
Yeah.
Where fans could call in and request 3 songs. And that's where like more of that would grow. When digital cable came out, there was a new channel that was supposed to be like a competitor to MTV and it actually played nothing but music.
Cool.
And there was a, it was called The Box. And I remember my best friend and I watching music videos all day, like all day watching music videos.
Right.
And we saw videos of Metallica's Until It Sleeps and a couple other different videos.
Yeah.
And so we would just hammer that out. And then, so that was the first time I actually like recognized who they were.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I didn't really like grow up with like the thrashier side or like, you know, in a certain side. I started in the middle where it was like turning from Black Album into Load and Reload. And then I was really starting to play music. I would start playing bass and start playing instruments in band and orchestra and stuff like that. And then I came across when Netflix was first coming out and they would mail you DVDs.
Oh yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, I rented Metallica S&M on there. And that's the first time I really deep dove into Metallica. And that's what made me want to play guitar. So I grabbed, basically I got a guitar after that and started learning as much as I could, just hammering out songs, looking up tabs online. And that's really how I learned, was just doing tabs online.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I kind of got bored of learning other people's songs and started the creative process of writing your own. And I actually lost interest in band and orchestra and just focused solely on that, you know, just because it just was more fun and more adapt to that. So
yeah, for sure. That's awesome. And we'll definitely get into talking about your band a little bit, Aurora's Eyes. Cause there's some cool stuff in there, but, I want to go back real quick. A short little quick, detour here. You mentioned that that radio station did mandatory Metallica. I feel like that was a thing around the country, especially in the early 90s when they were getting just so massive. Cause we had a radio station in Southern California back in the day, 105.5 KNAC. It was called Pure Rock 105.5. Mm-hmm. I remember I had a t-shirt from the radio station on the back. It said, if it's too loud, you're too old.
That's right.
And, but that's I think it was every Tuesday night or something like that. They did a mandatory Metallica from like 10 to midnight or something. And back in the day, I would just have my little boombox in my bedroom and I'd put a tape in. I would record the entire thing. And I had to time it just right where it's like, okay, I only have a 60 minute tape. So I can only record like the first hour of it. Or I'd grab another tape. And it was that careful art of like, hey, the tape's about to end, it's recording, but they're still in the middle of the song. There's still like 5 more minutes in the song. And sometimes I get cut off and stuff like that. But all that to say, I just find it really interesting that I'm sure in a lot of places around the country that they had these mandatory Metallica nights for the metalheads, you know, on these radio stations. Oh, yeah. I loved it.
I think it was a discussed thing within companies for the rock stations, because a lot of the rock stations that are owned by like Intercom, which is now Odyssey, Clear Channel, who is now iHeart, they would connect and format and formulas together in meetings. That was one thing I learned. I thought there was a lot of things that I thought our station was just unique with, but then I found out like, oh, this voice guy is used for all the same rock stations for the same company or something like that, you know. And just when we get into talking about the show, I ended up actually working at the same company as KSW eventually. And around the same time of the show, but we'll get to that in a little bit. And that's where I learned a lot of the behind the scenes stuff.
Very cool.
Of, you know, the inner workings. But it was really cool. I wish they still did something like that. You know what I mean?
For
because
sure.
Of how much of an impact that band has had in rock in general. You know what I mean? But a lot of the rock stations these days are almost blending hard rock with alternative rock.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And that's one thing I've been seeing, you know. So there's not really a lot of like Metallica heavy stuff or even just heavier stuff in the daytime. It's a lot of, you mix classic rock with the grunge and then alternative music.
And you're guaranteed to hear Glycerine by Bush every hour.
Exactly.
I mostly listen to, if I'm just like running errands around town, I mostly just listen to the couple, you know, either like Jack FM, which is just everything, or one of the two rocks, you know, main rock stations here, the Buzz and not Light 100. That's a good station too, but 105.9 The Rock. And you'll hear, you know, Until It Sleeps, or, you know, maybe Enter Sandman, mm-hmm. or something like that, or Unforgiven. But yeah, it is interesting how they mix in stuff that at a time wouldn't really be considered like hard rock or something like that. It was more alternative or grunge, which I guess in its own way is kind of hard rock, but yeah,
it makes sense. Yeah. I mean, like growing up in Seattle, you're just surrounded by grunge music.
Oh yeah.
Because it's the pride of Seattle. And I see it everywhere. What's funny is like, I think I was talking to Clint about this not too long ago, but like, I was watching that Jerry Cantrell Gibson video or whatever.
Oh, the Icons.
Like
yeah.
Icons. Yeah. And I found out like where they formed the band, and the building, the music bank, is actually like within 2 minutes walking distance of my work, but
that's cool.
Not there anymore. The old location. So I was just like, man, there's a lot of history that I haven't even delved into because
right.
I got burned out on it. I got burned out on grunge music when I was a kid because you're surrounded by it.
I think I've been to that music bank. Do you know when that one closed?
I don't know. It's torn down. It was turned into a PCC, like a grocery store.
Okay.
But right across the street from it is the house that inspired the book and movie Up.
Oh, that's right. That is based in Seattle. So I don't know if that music bank is the same one, but when I was playing in that band Demon Hunter, whenever we were doing either recording or rehearsals in Seattle, we would oftentimes go to a music bank because it was like, you know, rehearsal spaces. You could go there and get your guitar worked on, things like that.
Yeah. So where did you guys rehearse at? Because I know of a few different locations. Like there's the Rainier Brewery. There is Soto. There's a few different other places.
I think we rehearsed in a place in Soto. I remember it was just south of downtown. But
yeah,
recording wise, the records that I did were in Capitol Hill. There used to be a studio that the label owned.
Mm-hmm.
It was around the corner of Pine and Summit in Capitol Hill. It was a great area back then. It was before that, like, because it's as far as I was always told by my friends in Seattle, like Pearl Jam basically owned most of the buildings around Capitol Hill, or not most, but they owned a lot of the real estate around there. Just invested in it a long time ago, and then I think they sold some of it, and then it's like unrecognizable now. But back then, it was so much fun because we'd be in the studio, and you can literally just walk anywhere and get food, a beer, whatever. You know, I would always go to that little coffee shop down the street. It was called Bauhaus. It was super fun. But, but yeah, we would often go by music bank to, you know, pick up stuff or little supplies we needed for tour, this and that. But yeah, it is crazy to think that watching that Jerry Cantrell thing, that's like, wow, you know, it's not just like just Seattle as a whole, but these little pockets where things happened around Seattle that made that sound what it is. But,
yeah.
But yeah, but man, let's dive back into, you know, you know, you're talking about, because of, you know, ordering S&M on Netflix when it was just DVDs only, starting to learn how to play guitar, things like that. Is this kind of an era where you, because you're learning guitar, because as a guitar player, it's like when you learn your favorite band's riffs or whatever solos, it's like all of a sudden the connection becomes stronger, you know?
Yeah. And it just felt fulfilling, especially like I was doing band and orchestra, and I was in junior high at that point too. So
right.
I was playing brass instruments. I was playing trumpet and tuba and stuff like that.
You could have been in a ska band.
I know I could have, but I didn't pursue it. And the reason why was when I was in sixth grade and starting on it, the band teacher then was the same band teacher as the high school I was going to go to. And he told me in front of the entire class that I make the entire band sound worse.
Wow. He said that in front of everybody?
When I was like in sixth grade, I was 12 years old. And I was like, I don't think I ever want to work with this guy ever again.
Wow. That's a terrible thing to say to a sixth
and
grader.
So I quit before I went into high school. And I was like, I'm just going to focus on playing guitar.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I think you made a good choice, man.
I think so.
I mean, not that there's anything wrong with trumpet. I mean, I love the trumpet. I've been in bands with horn players, you know, for years and years. But, nothing compares to learning how to play guitar. And, you know, then you get your first acoustic, then you get your first electric, your first amp. It's all so exciting. It's still exciting. I've been playing guitar since I was 11 years old. And
yeah,
I still get excited when I get a new piece of gear or something, you know.
Same here.
Yeah.
Same here. It's so much fun, especially like nerding out on the gear that you get and everything and trying new things out.
Yeah.
Like all the guitars I own have different styles of pickups in it.
Absolutely.
You know? And you know, it's, I don't like to just have everything being exactly the same. I like to have something utilized for one thing over another.
And yeah. So, I think I've, I mean,
one variety.
I've got, you know, a bunch of guitars I've collected over the years. And there's, I'm trying to look around. You can't see what I'm looking at as my wall of guitars in front of me, but I don't, there's only a couple that I have that kind of sound similar to each other, but almost everything I have definitely sounds different. It's like over here, I've got, you know, even two different Gretches, but they're, you know, 50 years apart from each other. And when they were made, so they sound way different. And my, maybe my Telecasters sound similar to each other, but there's even differences there. I mean, I've got my Jazzmaster, and then I've got another Jazzmaster here that I might trade to a friend. And those two sound different. You know, it's everyone, exactly. Every guitar, even if you buy two of the same guitar, maybe in a live setting, most people in the audience wouldn't notice, but you know, you spend enough time with the two guitars that are similar, you're going to find a lot of differences in tone and even feel. You could buy two of the same Strats from the same year, same color, same everything, and they will feel different.
Yeah, exactly. No, things change in guitar companies over many, many years.
Yeah.
You know, you'll have different factories, different builders, different luthiers, people in charge that can seriously affect the way that a guitar comes out from different decades.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really cool to see, you know, we've been seeing a lot of bigger companies buying out a lot of smaller companies too,
right,
lately, and expanding too. So, I mean, Gibson just bought Mesa, I think.
I know.
It's insane. My dual rectifier is pre-Gibson.
You know? I know. Yeah, it's wild to think about. You know, you think of a company like Mesa Boogie that, you know, even Metallica used those for a long time and stuff like that. You know, it's hard to believe that a company like that would get bought out, or maybe, I don't know if they,
I don't know
if there was a need for them to sell, if they weren't doing great. I have no idea. I don't know a ton about Mesa. I've never owned one, but yeah, it is a trip, you know. Or for instance, you know, for a number of years, one of my favorite guitar companies has been Guild. It's the first good acoustic I ever got. I learned on my dad's Guild, and so I've always been a fan of them. And now I've got a couple of their electrics and stuff. And, you know, at one point Fender owned them, and they kind of ran it into the ground. And now this other company called Cordoba owns it, and they're not doing a great job with it. And Guild has such a great legacy. It's always such a shame to see these long-standing guitar companies, you know, because back in the day it was like Gibson, Fender, and Guild were like, and you know, there's Martin, of course, and but you know, they were all making such cool guitars, and like, it's just a shame when a bigger company buys it and then doesn't really do anything to benefit it or help it
or
progress it, you know. But you know, and hopefully in this case, you know, Gibson does that with Mesa and whatnot.
Yeah, I hope this, just when Gibson buys companies, that they just let the company do their thing, because especially if they're already successful, like Mesa is, you know, if it's not broke, why fix it?
Right.
You know, and just, so I hope that that's what they're doing instead of just like taking their philosophies and trying to manipulate it into
right.
that company, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
But, yeah. So, I mean, like you were saying, like, you know, Metallica used Mesas and stuff like that. That's what really influenced me on a lot of the gear that I bought over the years too, is like, what tone am I going for? Well, what's my favorite band, you know, and just, that's what I would try to aim for, but then try to put my own flair to it.
Right.
And such, so, you know, and I think everybody does that though.
For sure.
You know, everybody has that instinct to them. So,
you have to start somewhere too. Yeah. You know, when you first get a, you know, your first electric and an amp and maybe a couple pedals, you know, especially when you're young, maybe, and a lot, most of us were this way, you just don't know any better. Then you're like, oh man, I love the Black Album and those guitar sounds. And, you know, back then I didn't know what they were playing on the record. You know, I hadn't seen a year and a half yet or anything like that. There was no internet back then to like look up things. So I would just sit at home with like whatever distortion pedal I had. And I'm like, it sounds nothing like it. But eventually you start to find your own sound and what you like, and what you prefer. And, you know, like I own a Metal Zone pedal, but I don't really use it that much. It's just kind of fun to have, you know. You know, I'm more of someone that's kind of a, I guess it depends on what kind of music I'm playing or what I'm recording, but, you know, my bass tone is always like a barely overdriven clean tone. I don't like squeaky clean. I want it a little bit of drive there, you know. And then you have a couple different pedals, overdrive pedals after that or something to have different stages of gain, as they call it. But yeah, you know, and the same thing probably went for James or Kirk or any of these massive rock stars we've always known. They look up to somebody, they try to match that tone. And in that process, you find your own.
Exactly. You know, and the first record I bought, Metallica record I bought, was Ride the Lightning. And that just from front to back had such an influence on me in high school. The next one I bought was Injustice for All. Then it was like Load and Reload. And then Black Album was just given to me, you know, and it's because, you know, I started collecting the CDs. I would have the big ass just fucking binder of CDs and, you know, just carry that around in high school and just pop in different ones. And, but like for literally like sophomore and junior year of high school, I was listening to nothing really but Metallica and, you know, and just trying to do as much as I can there. But then like, you know, you try to grow and adapt as a musician by listening to some, maybe like other bands that people are referenced or recommending to you. And so I got into like more of the progressive stuff, like, you know, Dream Theater and, Porcupine Tree and stuff like that.
Right.
And then like some Iron Maiden too, you know, they have some of those kind of like avant-garde parts.
Oh yeah,
you
for know, sure. And Iron ethics, Maiden's you know? Awesome. So
yeah, they are. And so I would like kind of do that, but I would still always like feel home with like listening to Metallica.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they're that powerful of a band where they just, every Metallica fan that's anywhere above casual will know that, you know, there's just something about that band and their music and lyrics and all that stuff that just captivate people for life. And we're all like that. And that's the reason me and Clint do this podcast. It's like, you know, Clint's 36, almost 37. I'm 42. It's like, and we're still listening to Metallica just for fun, not even just for the podcast. You know, it's like, it's
exactly,
man, I have a Metallica blanket draped over my couch right here. It's just,
I see that.
It's just awesome. one of those things that, you know, that it, there's certain artists that will impact you and make a connection in your life. And that'll last literally a lifetime. You know, I've got a ton of bands in my vinyl collection now that are that way. Metallica being, up there at the top.
Even going into like the heavier stuff, like I got really into like death metal, black metal, like more extreme kind of stuff, like listening to bands like Death, Cattle Decapitation, Demi Borgir and stuff like that. But then also I was going into college and really getting into what the college radio station was doing, because that's what I was going in for, was this radio.
Yeah.
And the college radio station was called Today's Rock, but it was all underground rock. So
cool.
We would listen to just, you know, Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, Real Big Fish.
There's the ska we're talking about.
Aquabats, Streetlight Manifesto, you know, Dropkick Murphys, basically just anything that was not played on regular radio.
Yeah.
You know, it was really cool. And the station's still there. It's been over there over 20 years and they started playing grunge. They actually, like Nirvana played at Green River Community College in the, I forgot what year it was, but it was way before. It was like one of the first times they ever played Smells Like Teen Spirit and the crowd did not care. Like that was one of the funny stories about it, was like when they started playing that song, people didn't really freak out or go crazy over it. It was wait until like after the music video came out,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
And but yeah, it was really cool to hear like the stories of that station and that legacy of that station. And so I expanded my horizons, even though I always felt home and go back to Metallica just on any random occasion.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I would just constantly just open my horizons on music and really just try to explore my mind. And then basically was doing the college radio thing. I had my own specialty show, which was more of just progressive rock stuff. And I would be on after the hardcore show, which was always fun because that's where I got really into like Black Flag, Bane, stick to your guns, just all these really cool hardcore bands.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is the two hosts of the hardcore show are now the hosts of Metal Shop on KISW.
Oh, wow. Crazy.
And yeah, so, and the two hosts before that, I think you actually know one of them because he was really good friends with the guys in Demon Hunter. His name's Steve Rock.
Steve Rock. And I don't know if I know Steve.
Or Roush. His real last name is Roush, but okay. He went by Steve Rock. And I remember, like, after he quit working at KSW, this was years ago, he actually, like, I think went on tour. This might have been after you were done with Demon Hunter.
Sure.
He went and did merch for them on, like, a tour or something like that.
Okay. Interesting.
He had dreads.
Yeah, that might have been after my time or something. I'm sure yeah. You know, Ryan or Don, those guys know who you're talking about. But
yeah, yeah. So, but anyways,
I digress.
I won't be deep in that hole there. I would work my way through there. I became the imaging guy over there. I'd create all the different bumpers, different zingers, stuff between songs, PSAs. And then I got into a internship at Intercom Radio, now Audacity or Odyssey. And basically was working at a country station, just checking mail, doing anything anybody needed, you know, putting in music. And the worst job I ever had to do was put in Christmas music for
country Christmas.
Oh my God, it was so bad.
It was so bad.
Because the other thing is too, is like when you're putting in music on the station there, you're playing it in real time into the system if it's not working.
Yeah.
So they didn't have a way to rip the CD like into it. So yeah. It was really weird. So I had to do that, you know, just anything I could. And I was there all the time. They just gave me a key and they didn't tell me any restrictions on, you know, you can only be here from this time to this time.
Right.
I just go in there whenever and just worked. And the thing was, KSW, the rock station I grew up listening to, was down the hall.
Yeah.
So my idea was like, if I'm there all the time, maybe I'll meet people, you know, and just maybe try to rub shoulders or whatever and try to get there or try to meet, you know, musicians and rock stars that I've always wanted to meet.
Yeah. Hello.
Sorry.
Thanks for calling. Mandatory Metallica request line.
Yeah.
What do you want to hear? I want to hear Sad But True.
First for you. I'm just going to unplug it for now.
There you go. That's punk rock right there. Just unplug punk the damn rock. Thing.
Right. And so I did that for about 6 months. I was interning and doing imaging, and then I ended up becoming the program director of the college radio station during that time, and then interning at the same time.
Yeah.
And I got to help put together the 20th anniversary show or stuff celebration and show for the college radio station, which was a lot of fun.
Cool.
Got to meet a lot of like the older alumni and such who are all over the country working at radio stations. And and then I ended up getting an offer to do, or I started doing weekends on the air at the country station. And so I would do that. And then one of the guys on the morning show heard me and was like, this guy is insane because he sounds like a rock guy on a country station.
Right.
We should see who he is. And they found out that I was just like a weekend guy and an intern. And they're like, well, we're looking for a new producer. Do you have any experience? And I said, yeah, even though I didn't. And you always say yes. And, you know, you just do it, you know, the best that you can. And so I ended up being the assistant morning show producer for Fits in the Morning, you know, at this radio station for 3 years. And then, I just woke up one morning and I said, I don't want to wake up at 2 a.m. every day anymore.
Yeah. Don't blame
you. I'm completely done. And it was just really just a struggle just to even do it. I was late multiple times because I just couldn't get up.
I mean, that's difficult. That's about the time I go to bed when I'm on tour. You know, it's like,
Exactly.
I couldn't do a job like that. I have to be in bed by like 6 p.m. or something, or maybe earlier.
And I really just, and I gave up a lot of the musical opportunities for that job too. And it was really bothering me that I couldn't play music all the time.
Right.
Like I used to. And so I just left and kind of went back to doing what I was doing, which was working in collision repair. And so I just do that and do music. And
yeah,
that's what I've been doing since. But, you know, and playing metal and playing, you know, and listening to Metallica has really been what my saving grace was.
Yeah, man.
So, but nothing wrong with that. This show is happened during the time that I was in working in radio at that company.
Right.
And one of the things was like, you know, I was thinking to myself, like, if I get there and just hang out at the station all day, maybe Metallica will show up to the station or somebody from right. one of the bands will show up to the station. And so I did that and I didn't realize, wait a minute, where are all the KSW guys? And I realized they're all at Key Arena hanging out there with all the bands. And I was like,
right, yeah.
Oh shit, I fucked up.
So, you just said this in the quiet office, you know, in the radio booth. You're like,
yeah.
Where's everybody at?
Exactly.
So then, this is a good segue into getting into the show at Key Arena. Yeah. So again, this is December 1st, 2008. And continue, please.
Yeah. So the night before, I saw AC/DC at the Tacoma Dome. And then I'm like, my ears are already just like battered. And I'm like thinking to myself, like, how am I going to do two shows in a row? So I get to the station here, I'm hanging around. And then one of my buddies, Kevin, who's actually the host of Metal Shop now, him and I were like, he was also doing like board hopping at the same company. And so him and I were like, let's just go to the show. Let's just go hang out. And
yeah,
so we just hung out for the day and went to the show. And, let's see here. So the openers for this tour or this leg of the tour were The Sword and Lamb of God. And this nice. Was Lamb of God's first night on the tour. Cause there was, cool. I think another band was on before them. And so I've seen Lamb of God multiple times.
Yeah. They were opening the same tour when I saw it in Australia. Lamb of God was on that.
This is my second time seeing The Sword. I saw The Sword at like a smaller venue, El Corazon, which used to be the Graceland up here.
Yeah, I remember that place. I played there. It was also called the off ramp. The off ramp. I was about to say the interstate, but yeah, the off ramp. When you're on stage there's an awkward pole on the stage.
There is.
It's so annoying. And that was my spot on stage when Demon Hunter played a show there.
There's a urban legend in Seattle about that pole. The reason why it's there. And so when Iron Maiden first toured the US, they played the off ramp there and they requested that the pole be moved. And apparently that because of the vibrations and all the craziness and chaos that happened, it almost like put the building in condemned or whatever they call it, you know, that. And so they had to put the pole back. And so that's what is the urban legend here in Seattle in the rock and metal scene, is that
let's just go with that
the building to go down, you know.
I like that story. Let's just say that's what happened.
Yeah. So I mean, I've seen The Sword there and they sounded good there, but you know, arenas, the sound in arena is really difficult to nail, and
yes,
Key Arena is really difficult arena to be in. I've only seen two good shows with sound for the main act, which was Metallica and then Roger Waters.
Yeah.
You know, those are the only two acts I've ever seen with really good sound in that venue. So The Sword, I really couldn't differentiate anything really. I could tell that they're playing, but like it was just wall of noise everywhere.
Yeah. Well, especially when especially when it's like the first of three or four bands and the arena is maybe a quarter of the way filled up at this point. So there's a lot of empty space in there that sound is going to bounce off of.
It's also that stage that's in the middle
of
the arena too. So you have that to deal with. Lamb of God came on and I was like, I was into it. I was against the guardrail and I was like, just excited because that was one of the first of the newer like metalcore bands that I really got into during that time. And all the bands I were in were metalcore bands and Lamb of God was like really influential on their riffing and stuff like that for me. So I was really stoked on it. And I think the album that was out was Sacrament. So like Walk With Me in Hell and Redneck and such like that were out. And it was really cool. It was really fun to see them on a big stage, because I've always seen them in like smaller clubs. The biggest right. stage I saw them on was like Ozfest before that, yeah. you know, and then seeing them on like move to this, you know, stage of this career, is really cool to see. So, and then I'm waiting for Metallica. And so right before things were happening, I see one of the guys from the radio station come up to do like, you know, the stereotypical introductions or whatever that right. they do. And it's one of the guys, he's not no longer there, but yeah, I remember him from the morning show. And I remember him like having a beer in his hand and saying like, yeah, I was just in the dressing room hanging out with Lars and we were having champagne. And I'll never forget this. There's two kids in front of me and they look at each other and they go, oh my God, Lars is drinking again. And I go, I don't think he ever stopped.
Yeah. You know? I mean,
I think you got the wrong member, guys.
Yeah. I think you might. That's awesome, man. But
it was just like, what?
It's amazing when that kind of stuff happens and people just get one thing wrong, but it's a major thing.
Yeah. So I'm waiting. The anticipation's getting to me and just like, you know, I've never seen a Metallica show, so I didn't know what to expect.
Right.
And just like, I'm waiting. Death Magnetic was the first record I got to buy in a store.
Yeah.
You know, and so all of a sudden everything goes black. You hear, you know, Ecstasy of Gold come on and everybody's just losing it. And then all of a sudden, like you hear the opening to That Was Just Your Life. And there's these crazy green laser neon things coming down.
Yeah.
The coffins that were up in the air and
those
everything.
Are rad.
This is before the ones that they used for like Through the Never and such, where they had like the video screens on them.
Yeah.
These were just coffins with lights on them instead.
Yeah.
Cause I think they did those later. So I was like, hell yeah, you know, and then End of the Line, which I'm looking at the track list
yeah.
right now, or the set list right now. And I was just like, this couldn't get any better. And then all of a sudden Creeping Death comes in. I'm like, oh, it just did, you know?
Yeah, totally. So, you're only hearing two new songs right now. It's going to get even better.
Yeah. So then after Creep, it goes into Harvester, which was a song I never really got into until like after that show, because I saw it live and was like, yeah, this is sick live.
Yeah, there's certain songs by not even Metallica, but lots of bands that you might think, you know, that's not one of my favorites on the record, but then you hear it live and it just takes on a whole new meaning.
Yeah. And then we go into One, which I was like, wow, that was really fast.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It really fast going into One. But just the theatrics of everything on the stage, you know, to replicate like that opening tape was just really cool.
Explosions and all that stuff.
Yeah. So, and because also like that was one of my favorite guitar solos of all time too.
Yeah.
And seeing that up close and personal, having Kirk actually stand right in front of me for the guitar solo was pretty rad.
I know. That's so much better than tabs online.
I know. I'm like, hey, can you slow down? I want to learn that part.
Pardon me. Excuse me. Guys, could you start that again and just have Kirk play it slower?
Just stop. Stop.
Everyone, stop the show.
Everybody, stop. Just slow it down.
It's all about me right
slow
now.
Down. Can you do it halftime real quick?
Right. Just need a halftime. That's all.
Then they do two more new ones. They did Broken, Beaten, Scarred, then Cyanide, which Cyanide was one of my favorite jams from that record. I wish they played All Nightmare Long.
Yeah.
But then they go Sad But True. Then Sanitarium after that, which was a surprise to me because I was like, I didn't think that they would play that one regularly live.
Right.
Then we go into, I believe this is the first Black Album song. Yeah. Album song on there was
Sad But True. Looks like that was the first.
Oh,
one.
Sorry. Never mind. I'm waking up still. Right. Yep. Yep. True Non's after me. Wherever I Might Roam. And then The Day That Never Comes, which was basically like seeing One all over again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's really cool.
It has the same vibe, same format. It's like the fourth track on the record, you know, which we've talked about a lot on the show. I mean, it's like the what we call starts as a ballad, ends as a thrash banger.
Exactly.
And the Sanitarium, Fade to Black, that you know, the list goes on. But
yeah,
Day That Never Comes was always one of my favorite tracks on the record, because that was the first single release too.
Yeah, that too. I mean, when I first heard it, I was like, when I first heard the Clean stuff, I was like, I'm not sure about this yet. And then when it started building up and building up, I'm like, oh yeah, this is what I want.
Yeah, you know? Totally.
Then we go to Master of Puppets, which was it was just a treat.
Oh yeah,
you know, as always. And then Blackened came on, which I was like, what? You know,
yeah,
not thinking like they would do that, because it just seemed like, I don't know, it was like Blackened to me has always been like a show opener, just because of Seattle 89 and
sure,
you know, hearing it there. But like, it instantly took me back to like when I first got Injustice for All. My dad had this, he bought this Dodge Viper, and he would pick me up from school and have me, this is when I had like my learner's permit, he would let me drive it like home from high school, and we would blast Blackened
that's
out
cool
there. And I could tell he was not enjoying it at all. I was just like, thought this was like the coolest fucking thing on the planet.
Driving a Viper, listening to Blackened.
Yeah. And then we go into the most polar opposite of Blackened, which is Nothing Else Matters, which is like a huge change. And then Sandman after that, which I was like, man, I hope it's not over.
Yeah. I mean, this is the one of those eras post Black album where they, you know, they closed the main set with Enter Sandman, but still have an encore.
Exactly.
There's part of that I kind of miss, because, you know, it's like, you know, I get
that's
it
the
though.
Last time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think maybe it won't happen ever again, but I guess more as like a hardcore fan of the band, I like that, because then you know there's more coming. The big hits done. But this encore is great too.
Well, yeah, because like this show was the last time I ever saw it like this. Every other show I've seen after that was always Enter Sandman was the encore finisher, you know? And I saw the night before the Super Bowl 50 show in San Francisco, it was that way. You know, Seattle at CenturyLink Field, same thing, you know? And even SNM2, same thing. Las Vegas on the Hardwired or Worldwire tour, same thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's ever going to change, because honestly, I mean, it's a perfect spot for it.
Right.
You know, but this was a huge surprise for me, being a massive Misfits fan, just seeing, you know, Die Die My Darling come up as the first song of the encore.
Yeah.
And then even surprised me more, Motor Breath comes on right after that.
Well, I'm looking at some of the show notes on Metallica.com, and saying this is the first time in 23 years that Motor Breath was performed in Seattle. The last time it was performed was March 17th, 1985 at the Moore Theater.
Yeah, which is wild, right?
It's pretty cool.
And then Seek and Destroy to close it out, which was, it was the perfect game. They had all the house lights come on, and they had these, I mean, everybody who probably went on that tour to see them knows about the beach balls that would come down, the death magnetic beach balls. And the funniest part, so I'm never going to forget this. Two things happen. I look behind me. I'm on the floor. Lamb of God is standing right behind me watching, because it's the first night of the run for them, and they've never opened for Metallica up to that point. And so they're watching, and I fanboyed out for a minute.
Sure.
And I was like, I got to go say hi. I got to go say hi, like in my head. Hey, so Randy. I walk up to Willie Adler. And I go, hey, man, that was a really good set. And he just kind of, he didn't say anything to me. He just shook my hand and just gave me this like a look of like, you're annoying me. And he just was like, just gave me a nod, you know, and that was it. And I was like,
awkward.
I fucked up.
I mean, you never know when you're approaching anybody that, you know, you look up to. Sometimes it's, hey, it's so nice to meet you, and it's a good conversation or whatever. And other times it's just like a nod.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and that was just an awkward one. But I guess that band was just mentally in a weird spot during that time period, too. Like, all those guys were going through shit. And
right.
So I can understand it later.
That's one thing me and Clint have talked about in the past, too, is like a lot of us are like, oh, yeah, we should totally, you know, go up and say hi to so-and-so, blah, blah, blah. But you just never know what someone's going through ever. Yeah. But especially if, you know, you're in a situation where you want to meet like an artist you love or a guitar player or whatever. You know, it's like the time I went up and said, hey, to Vinnie Paul, he literally looked at me and turned around and walked away. I was like, oh. And
dude, that's so weird because, like, I've heard the opposite.
Same.
Of, like, that situation with him, you know?
I always heard he was, like, the best dude and wanted to hang and stuff. And I was in a band literally on the same tour as the band he was playing in, like, on this festival tour in Australia called Soundwave. And we were literally all getting on the same bus to go to the venue. And so, like, after he, like, walked away from me, I'm like, oh, that was weird. And I thought, like, okay, at first you're like, oh, what a dickhead.
Which year was that?
Soundwave. 2011, I believe.
Okay.
I'd have to look
at it. That was a festival I always wanted to go to, but rest in peace.
Yeah. You know? Well, unfortunately, the guy that ran that thing ran it into the ground.
Yeah. He did.
He got into a lot of trouble, I think. But
yeah.
He was super cool to us and took us out to like a fancy dinner in Adelaide one night.
So you were in Reliant K at that point. Yeah. Right?
And we worked with
Did you? Did you play on the Skillet and Decipher Down tour?
No. That must have been before me. Reliant K was on that?
Yeah, so Reliant K was like, so it was like Decipher Down opened up.
Seems
then it was
so
Reliant
weird.
K, and there was Skillet, and it was at this new arena in Kent that they just opened up at that point. And so I was like, man, if Ethan was playing at that show, that means I've seen Ethan in two separate bands. Like,
yeah, I definitely did not play that tour. That had to have been before me.
Honestly, it was a weird show.
Yeah.
It was just a weird show.
That's a weird lineup for Reliant K to be in with two like heavier bands, you know, but maybe it was a time when Reliant K was, you know, kind of on the up.
Yeah. So, I mean, so on Seek and Destroy. So after I do this, right?
Perfect segue back to Metallica.
So, Seek and Destroy is going on. The beach balls come down. I awkwardly say hi to the guys in Lamb of God in a weird way. I turn around and I look up into the top tier level area and I see a guy who grabbed a beach ball running up the stairs as fast as he can. And there's a guy at the end of the row that just hits the ball right out of his hands. And the guy was so mad, he just punches him right in the face
over
and
a beach
huge
ball. It's a beach ball.
At one point,
you could buy them on their website. You might still be able to.
I know, it was just really weird, but like, then they were you know, saying their goodbyes and they're throwing picks out. I caught a few picks and it was just really fucking cool.
You know, man, especially like, for your first show.
My first Metallica show.
Yeah, man, that's so awesome.
Way better than my first concert.
Yeah, which man,
was in sync.
Hey, there you go. Hey, but the production on that tour, was that the No Strings Attached tour? I'm assuming.
That was before. That was like their first record.
Oh, so you're like you're a true with in sync.
I'm a true in sync, man, guys.
True sync. The feeling of going to your first concert is something you'll never forget, but the feeling of going to your first Metallica show, I mean, unfortunately I didn't get to see them until, you know, 2009 or whatever. And I've talked about extensively on the show about, you know, them playing the cities I live in and I'm always on tour and can't ever go. Like the time they played in Nashville when Lemmy came out, I wasn't even in town. But when I first got to see it, it was the same tour you saw, you know, and it was just, it was so badass and so exciting. And we got like the VIP treatment because, you know, my band was on tour with Paramore and their tour manager used to work for Metallica. So he like got us in and they sent a runner to pick us up in a van. It was awesome. Went to like the Metallica bar, family and friends area before the show and had a couple of drinks and then got to watch the show right in front of Big Mick against the rail. So we weren't like super close to the stage, but we didn't really want to be. We wanted to kind of see the whole the whole picture, you know, the coffins coming down, all that stuff. And man, I remember just being so excited. And God bless my wife. She came with me because she came on that tour with us in Australia. But she's like, I'm only going because it's your birthday. I was like, I'm telling you, you don't have to come. Like, I'm probably going to, no offense, but I'm not going to pay much attention to you tonight.
Yeah.
My eyes are going to be fixated on that stage.
I took my wife to the night before show down at San Francisco or whatever before the Super Bowl. We drove down and then when Metallica's coming back to town or whatever, I'm like, do you want to go? And she's like, no, one time was enough.
Totally. Oh, even though, like, you know, when they played Nashville, you know, my friend Wes, who's been on the show, Wes Fisk, you know, we worked together a bunch when I was working for Kings of Leon, and, you know, he was working for Metallica now. And so he got me and Paul and Clinton to the show, and like, I could have, you know, got my wife in there with us, and she's like, no, I'm good. You guys have fun.
Well, I think, you know, it's not always good to have a partner who's into every single thing that you're into.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Sure. Like,
I think there's certain things that they never do line up, but, you know, the things that do are always good, you know?
Right. So, exactly.
But also then you're exploring other things that you're into, you know, I'm really into music. She's really into comedy or, you know, whatever she's into. And we just,
right.
Like, we're, you know, through each other's stuff there, and it's a lot of fun. And so,
yeah, for sure. You know, everyone needs their things, you know, like
everybody,
whether, yeah. You know, it doesn't have to be the same thing as your wife, your girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, but you know, it's like, you know, I've got my main things that I'm into even just outside of Metallica. Like that's just a part of my taste, but it's like, you know, my thing is music and guitars and drums and basses and recording and vinyl and cassettes and all that stuff, you know, and she'll listen to vinyl with me, or I'll be like, hey, what do you want to listen to? And she'll like name something and I'll pull it out and we'll listen to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, and she's got her thing too. And it's like, she, you know, we recently were able to buy this classic car because she's always wanted one ever since I've known her. And so now she's got like her passion project, and it makes me so happy. Nice. And I'm into it too. And it's rad, but I just step back because I'm like, this is totally her baby. This is her thing. You know, and that's how it is with a lot of Metallica fans. You may not be with somebody that is into it, but, and she'll roll her eyes a lot, you know, at me with certain things, especially when I told her I was going to start a Metallica podcast. She's like, oh my gosh, that's insane. And here we are, you know, 4.5 years in, it's still going.
Right.
but yeah, man,
you guys do an amazing job.
No, thanks,
you know,
man.
And you guys do it right. And, I mean, I've done podcasts in the before, you know, and honestly, like, forget two guys who have never even worked in the radio business, you know,
right.
You guys put on production that's almost better than most radio stations.
That's kind of, you know, what I don't know at what point we just start throwing out ideas or putting in little bumpers and things like that and making a commercial or whatever. But I mean, DIY. We do everything ourselves, you know, every single bumper is Clint did most of them. I've recorded a few, but yeah, they're all written and recorded by us. And
yeah,
you know, and that's how I always describe it. If someone's not into podcasts or anything and they're like, what exactly is it? I'm like, well, I'm surprised you don't know, cause everyone has a podcast now, but I'm like, it's like a long form, you know,
radio show,
interviews, things like that, you know? So, that's kind of how we look at it, is like a bit of a radio show, you know? But yeah, man. Hey, I want you to plug your band, by the way, so people can check it out. I know we have talked about it, like we've mentioned on the show before, but tell me where people can find your music and stuff.
So I'm in two bands now. So I got Aurora's Eyes, which is my main band. If you're into like prog rock, prog metal, you will enjoy it. If you're into bands like Tool, Mastodon, Metallica, Pink Floyd, mixing all together. You can find us on social media, on Facebook. You can find us on Spotify, iTunes. Our latest single, The Hunt for Uriah, is out January 2022. We're gonna go back in the studio, record a whole new record.
Awesome.
We pretty much have almost all of it written out, almost like 14 songs written out.
Cool.
So we're just waiting for our drummer to get back into the town. He's on a bicycle trip across the country.
Kidding. That's awesome, actually.
I'm just waiting, man. I'm just waiting for him to get back, but this is a dream of his since he was in high school.
Wow,
so
that's amazing, actually.
Let him do it, you know. And so once he's back, then rehearsals happen in November and December, and then we'll be in the studio after that.
That's awesome.
My other band is called Find Forever. I just joined this band. I play lead guitar for them. It's a pop punk band, a little heavier pop punk band.
Yeah. Kind of like a,
find them.
Like, what would you compare it to? Like Day to Remember, or they're kind of a little more metal, I guess, but.
A Day to Remember, but less metal, more like Sum 41.
Yeah.
Set
Your Goals, bands like that.
Yeah. Set Your Goals.
The Wonder Years. That's a good one too.
Yeah. The Wonder Years. We've been rehearsing, getting ready to start doing shows since Seattle has opened up again.
Cool.
So you find them on Facebook, iTunes, Spotify, all the places, various places you can find music.
Have you recorded with them yet?
No. So all the stuff that's on there is pre me.
Don't listen to it.
Wow.
Just kidding.
I also am producing a hockey podcast for the new Seattle Kraken.
Here. Oh, cool.
It's a Kraken. It's called the Kraken Fancast. You can find that on Spotify. We're having issues getting it on Apple Podcasts or whatever. And then the paranormal radio show that I help contribute to is launching on major market radio this weekend. So
that's awesome.
It's called that's called US Phenomenon. You can check it out, usphenomenon.com. And so, yeah, that's a lot of
stuff. I mean, you're kind of like Clint and I, where it's like you got your hand in all sorts of mixing pots of things happening, you know?
Well, when I got sober from alcohol, I had realized I had to keep myself busy.
Yeah.
Or else I would like start kind of getting bored and wanting to dip back into, you know, old habits. And
sure, so, man.
If I keep my mind busy and do the things I love doing, then that's what I got to do. So
that's
and
great.
Then balance on top of that being a dad and a husband and
yeah,
you know. So
well, congratulations on that, on everything, sobriety, new music coming up, family. That's amazing. That's all stuff cheers a sparkling water to.
Thanks. You know, thanks to you guys for having me on. Thanks to you guys for putting on this podcast. Honestly, Aurora's Eyes didn't really turn into a band until you guys played one of the songs on the podcast like years ago. And I was like, man, because everything was written by me.
Right.
Beforehand, like I wrote all the drums, I wrote all the guitars and bass stuff, and it was all instrumental before that. And
yeah.
So I was like, after you guys played it on the podcast and I was getting emails, I was like, I think I need to start this as an actual band.
This needs to be real. We're kind of like the in a way, us playing that was like I guess our version of putting you on Metal Massacre, you know.
I know, right? I know.
Like, oh shit, now I have to do this.
Now I got to do this. And so, but thank you. You know, thank you guys for everything.
Yeah,
man. You guys have done support us, and I will always keep myself helping you guys out at the same
Sweet.
Time.
Sweet. Well, we're appreciative of you not only doing this morning at an early hour, but just being supportive of the show and, you know, being part of the OGs.
Yeah. The OGs.
Yeah. That's a weird thing to say. I guess we could say that now. I mean, it's been almost 5 years. So.
Yeah. I mean, like, the coolest thing is the community that you guys have built, you know, being on the Discord with like the other patrons or just other musicians and sports guys and stuff like that. It's just really, it's really fun to talk to people, especially like during the pandemic and you couldn't really go out and see a lot of people, especially
right.
with Seattle being as shut down as it is. It launched me into like, I started a fan chapter for the Metallica fan chapter, which
yeah.
is Seattle Inc. If anybody in Seattle is looking to join a fan chapter, you can join us. But then like creating, you know, meeting other Metallica fans and creating this, you know, really fun thing to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's awesome.
It's just like, it's really cool to see like how it doesn't matter where you come from, what you believe in, what, you know, what side you're on. We all love Metallica.
Agreed.
That's
the yeah.
coolest thing ever.
Absolutely. You know? Man. And that's, yeah, I mean, and that, you know, we did our best to, I don't even know if we created the community necessarily. We just kind of were the flagpole in the middle.
You lit the match.
Yeah.
You lit the match.
We put out match.com and it was up to everyone else to sign up and find their match.
You lit the match. The way that I describe it is like, you remember the Showbox?
Oh yeah.
Here in Seattle?
Oh yeah.
So a couple of years ago, there was an article that went out that's saying like they were going to sell it, shut down and turn it into an apartment complex. When I saw that, I started a petition to save it. And some reason I got roped into politics
Wow.
after that time, because I ended up going to meetings and all sorts of stuff. But honestly, I just connected the people that needed to get connected
Yeah.
to save it. And I feel like that's in the way of like what you guys did with your podcast is like you were able to connect people with each other that needed to be connected to each other.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool to see from our end too. Just, I mean, we'll get people, you know, tagging us in photos or emailing, whatever, like hey, look who I'm hanging out with. And it's like someone from Kansas hanging out with somebody from New Jersey. You know, it's a trip, exactly. You know, or even when I've gone on vacation, like whenever it was about 2 years ago, almost, when me and my wife were in England and we hung out with, you know, Anya and a couple other people that just wanted to meet up and grab a beer. And we were already going out that night. It's like, yeah, sure. And it's just yeah. a trip, you know, I mean.
It is.
I often equate it to being in a band and you know, you get fans and they want to talk to you and things like that. But it's a little different with this because it's so specifically oriented to one band and
exactly. stuff like that.
But we're very grateful to not only be able to have done this for 4.5 years, but to have the audience that we do. It blows our mind constantly. So
yeah. Oh, I bet. Well, thanks, man. I got to get to work.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, it's about time to clock in and go reprimand some people for not tucking their shirt in or something.
Exactly, right?
But yeah, everyone go check out Aurora's Eyes on all the places you can find some digital music. And dude, again, thanks for being on here and good luck with the new record.
Yeah, dude. Thanks, man. Appreciate you guys.
All right. Hey everyone, this is Ethan and Clint. We're here to tell you about supporting the show via Patreon.
That's right. Every week, Ethan and I work hard to bring you the best Metallica content possible. If you think the show has value, consider supporting us on a financial level at Patreon.
For $5 a month, or the price of 2 cups of coffee, you can ensure that Metal Up Your Podcast continues to grow in quality and content. But that's not all.
In addition to being able to help sleep at night for supporting your favorite podcast, we've also come up with incentives to say thank you that are exclusively available to patrons. For example, for a pledge of $5 or more, you immediately get free downloads of every Cover Our World Blackened EP.
Ticket giveaways for shows like SNM2 and Slane Castle.
Box sets, rare vinyl, Metallica memorabilia like SNM2 guitar picks.
Email priority, meaning we'll read your email first on the show, with a chance to ask guests like Hailstorm, Jay Weinberg of Slipknot, and Metallica Road Crew your very own questions.
And the opportunity to come on the show as a guest for our Metal Tales bonus episodes, in which you can tell us all about any Metallica show you've been to in the past.
All this and more for becoming a patron and supporting Metal Up Your Podcast.
We couldn't do this show without you, and to everyone on the ride with us, we sincerely thank you. Peace.
Adios.
Ha 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 ha!